This is Jim Inkster. Busy show for us today. Kevin Cope, the head of the Faculty Senate at LSU, will be with us to talk about the prospective new president at the Whole War School, F. King Alexander. Also, Carl Monzenbacher, LSU horticulturist on the third annual Dinner in the Field and Farm Tour. We'll talk with filmmakers Tom Anton and Sandy Russell. They are in Louisiana for the opening of The Pardon, a movie that was filmed here about the last woman executed in our state, Tony Jo Henry, in 1942. And Robert Zirkelback will start with us. He is a health insurance person, and he is an expert on Medicare, and he's here to talk with us about the challenges involving Medicare under the Affordable Care Act. All this, but now, the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your number's 877-217-5757, or locally, 297-5633. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with Robert Zirkelback. He is the Vice President for Strategic Communications for America's Health Insurance Plans and is here to talk with us about health care and specifically Medicare. And good morning to you, Robert Zirkelback.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And you have extensive experience on Capitol Hill. You have worked with particular congresspeople, and in particular, you were press secretary for Congressman Jim Nussle, I believe.
That's correct.
Well, Robert Zirkelback, you work for the health insurance industry. Let's make that plain.
That's correct. I do.
And from that perspective, what do you see as the major challenges regarding Medicare right now?
Well, what our members provide is Medicare Advantage. So when a senior becomes eligible for Medicare, they have two options. They can enroll in the fee-for-service part of Medicare, where the government simply reimburses people for their medical bills. Or they have the option of enrolling in a private Medicare Advantage plan that provides additional services, additional benefits, that helps patients navigate which is an increasingly complicated delivery system, and they're getting higher quality care. And what we've seen in recent years is that this has been an incredibly popular program for people across the country, and particularly in Louisiana. And we're seeing enrollment growing tremendously. And unfortunately, as a result of the health care reform law, there's been a number of cuts to that program that are going to start going into effect over the next several years. And on top of that, the administration just last month announced a new cut to the program that's going to hit seniors hard. Next year, an average senior is going to, in Medicare Advantage, is going to experience $50 to $90 per month in either reduced benefits, higher premiums, or higher out-of-pocket costs. And this is going to be a tremendous strain on seniors who rely on this program.
So all citizens in the U.S. over 65 get Medicare. You're saying there have been cuts to that program as a consequence of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, there were cuts to the program in general, and then specifically the part of Medicare called Medicare Advantage, where about 30% of all seniors in the country get their Medicare benefits. In Louisiana specifically, there's 195,000 Medicare Advantage beneficiaries in your state who will be impacted just by the new cut that was announced last month.
All right, so everyone gets Medicare, but then people choose to buy supplemental policies, Medicare Advantage. Generally,
it's a little different, actually. This is different than supplemental coverage, actually. In Medicare Advantage, it's not supplemental, and actually it's all of their health care coverage is provided through a private Medicare Advantage plan. So they're able to coordinate everything. They're able to help patients navigate the complicated delivery system, and they're getting a better benefits, better services, and higher quality care.
So what does it cost the 195,000 people who are participants in Louisiana to get Medicare Advantage?
It costs what they're currently paying for the Medicare traditional Medicare program, and sometimes even less because there's competition in the program, because private plans have been able to innovate and develop new services. Seniors are actually able to get more than they otherwise would be able to get, additional benefits, additional services, and the data speaks for itself. Seniors are very satisfied with the coverage. They're showing better health outcomes, and unfortunately, they're going to face higher costs now as a result of what was included in the reform law and what was announced last month by the administration, unless that's finalized. And one of the reasons we're talking about this issue right now is that this new cut is scheduled to be finalized on April 1st, about 10 days away. So there's still time for people to contact Congress, urge them to speak out. There's already been over 120 members of Congress that have chosen to speak out against these cuts. Representative Cassidy has led the fight here in Capitol Hill, getting co-sponsors on both sides of the aisle, because there's a lot of concern that this is going to have a real impact on seniors.
All right, 297-5633, if you'd like to join us. We're visiting with Robert Zirkelback of the America's Health Insurance Plans, AHIP. He serves as a national spokesman for the insurance industry on many health care issues. And right now we're talking about Medicare and Medicare Advantage. And you say that cuts are on the table as of April 1. So what happens if those cuts go through?
What happens, it means that seniors are going to pay more and they're going to get less. And that's unfortunate because the program is working so well right now. In fact, data that we've seen shows that Louisiana is likely going to be hit harder than any other state in the country. And this is a program that's incredibly popular among seniors in Louisiana. And unfortunately, if these cuts go into effect, there's seniors are going to see their premiums go up and they're going to lose some of the benefits that they like and rely on today.
All right. So how much more will they pay?
Well, the analysis that was done by an actuarial firm, Oliver Wyman, says anywhere from $50 to $90 per month. And that's a real tangible impact on beneficiaries, particularly many low-income beneficiaries that are disproportionately enrolled in Medicare Advantage that rely on the benefits that this program provides and don't have an extra $50 or $90 a month that they can spend more on their health care.
So around $1,000 a year ballpark. And what,
yeah.
What services will be curtailed?
Well, I think we don't know for sure yet. We know when you take this much money out of the program, plans are going to try to offer the most affordable coverage, the most comprehensive coverage that they can, but it will have an impact. And seniors will still be able to choose among benefit packages that meet their needs. Just unfortunately, their choices are now going to be limited. And in some cases, they could lose their health plan altogether. You know, we've seen this before. In the late 1990s, Congress slashed the Medicare Advantage program to the point that it became not viable in many parts of the country, and seniors lost their health care coverage. And we're very much in danger of seeing that happen again unless Congress speaks out, unless the administration decides that they're going to protect this program.
All right. Are you saying, Robert Zirkelback, that the nearly 200,000 Medicare Advantage participants in Louisiana could lose their health care altogether? Is that what you're saying?
Would all of them? No. Could some of them? That's certainly possible. If the program, if Congress and the administration take this much money out of the program, it certainly might no longer be viable for some companies to continue offering the coverage that they do today. And that's a real risk, and one of the reasons why it's important that people speak out about this now.
When you say some companies, are you speaking specifically about individual companies like Blue Cross?
I can't say for sure specifically, which companies are going to offer, what policies and what markets. But this is a concern that we've heard raised, and it's something that we saw happen last time the program was significantly cut 10 years ago. So this isn't just speculative. We've seen this happen around the country before, and we want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Okay. Well, currently Medicare is broken into, four parts? Is that?
That's correct.
Okay. And Part A is hospital insurance. Would that be affected at all?
This is Part C.
Part D, which is hospital insurance, medical insurance, and prescription drug insurance, those would not be affected.
That's correct, though, just to be clear, in the Part C program in Medicare Advantage, that's where people get their both Part A and B coverage all together in one coordinated entity. So it is the hospital and physician services. It's the coverage that people have, the comprehensive health care coverage they get. They just get it through a private Medicare Advantage plan instead of getting it in the fee-for-service part of Medicare where the government is simply just reimbursing for services.
All right. So if something is not done between now and April 1st, you think that some people could be without the coverage they need and require?
That's correct. Certainly the coverage that they've chosen to enroll in today, the coverage that they like today, and some of the benefits that they rely on today.
Now, getting back to Medicare Part C, which is Medicare Advantage, and that's what we're talking about here, is being in jeopardy, according to Robert Zirkleback. What would happen if that went away altogether? If we didn't have that as an option, what happens if that occurs?
Well, seniors would then be the only option they would have then is to be in the fee-for-service part of Medicare, where they would be able to continue to get Medicare coverage, but it wouldn't have those additional benefits, those additional services that seniors have chosen to purchase today as part of their Medicare coverage. And the Medicare Advantage program has lower out-of-pocket costs for beneficiaries. They often provide additional services you don't get in the fee-for-service part of Medicare, often vision, hearing, dental, wellness programs, things that the beneficiaries want to be able to have in their benefit package. And more so, private Medicare Advantage plans help to coordinate care for beneficiaries. So when they're seeing multiple doctors taking many medications, they're in and out of the hospital, health plans can help to coordinate for that information for them so that they're getting the care that they need, not ending up back in the hospital unnecessarily.
Right. So they would have coverage, just not the kind of coverage that you think is necessary and that obviously 195,000 people believe is necessary. Now, I've gotten a few emails regarding Congressman Cassidy, who you mentioned. He's been on this show several times, and he has been an avid opponent of the Affordable Care Act. And public financing of health care, and yet he's worked at a public hospital for most of his career. Now, he is one who it would seem might have a bias going into this discussion. Do you share that point of view?
Well, I will certainly let the congressman speak for himself, but I think the 200,000 seniors in Louisiana will appreciate the fact that he's is helping to lead the fight against this new Medicare Advantage cut. Let me be very clear. This is a bipartisan effort here on Capitol Hill. Members of Congress and senators from both sides of the aisle have said, regardless of their views on the health care reform law, that the new cut proposed by the administration is just it's too far, and it will have too big of an impact on vulnerable seniors across the country.
Which Democrats are supporting your point of view?
I do not have the full list in front of me. There was the letter that I referenced that Congressman Cassidy really led on Capitol Hill.
But he's not a Democrat.
Members of Congress. What's that?
He's not a Democrat. Of those 98, are any Democrats? Are they all?
There was 20, and then there was a bipartisan Senate letter that was sent on Monday that had 11 Democrats and 11 Republicans. Again, bipartisan effort on Capitol Hill.
Okay, 297-5633 in our remaining time with Robert Zirkleback, who works for the health insurance industry and is president of strategic communications for America's health insurance plans. So where do you think it's going as far as the debate on Capitol Hill?
Well, that's a very good question. I think we've been very pleased that over the past week we have seen 120 members of Congress and senators reach out to the administration, urging them not to let this new cut go into effect. That's very encouraging. But ultimately, you know, we won't know for sure until April 1st. But we have been encouraged by the level of support among seniors across the country, among members of Congress on Capitol Hill, to help prevent this from going into effect.
Bruce and Walden, please be brief. Bruce, you're on with Robert Zirkleback.
Yeah, hi, Jim. It's Bruce. I'm a member of one of the Medicare Advantage plans. I'm about to get out of it. I found it to be incredibly inadequate. The coordination he's talking about doesn't exist, and the drug formulary is grotesquely inadequate. So just to introduce a little reality into the flim-flam here, Medicare Advantage is not what this guy is cracking it up to be.
All right. Would you respond, Robert?
Well, I would just say, you know, we did a survey of Medicare Advantage beneficiaries that we released just a couple weeks ago, and over 90% of seniors in the program express very high satisfaction with the coverage. They like the benefits, They like the services they're providing. And you're seeing more and more seniors choosing to enroll.
Hold that thought. We'll be back with Robert Zirkleback after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge as Congress weighs the benefits and the costs of Medicare Part C. Robert Zirkleback, who represents the health industry, the health insurance industry, is with us to talk about this, and he believes it's a viable plan that should be funded as it is, and that cuts that are potentially on the table could be devastating. Karen in Sherwood. Karen, you're on the air with Robert Zirkleback. Hi, Karen.
Good morning, Jim and Mr. Zirkleback. I think most Americans are not aware of the additional premium that the federal government pays into Medicare Part C over and above the premiums that are paid for the other parts. And it is quite substantial, and it is the thing that allows the Medicare Part C to operate at a profit to the private providers. Personally, I object to my tax dollars being used in this way because I believe anything extra that is paid into Medicare should benefit everyone, not just the seniors who appreciate having a health membership for a gym. And I would like Mr. Zirkleback to inform us all what percentage additionally is paid to the Part C program. And when you understand that all of Medicare is under attack and will be reduced as required in order for the program to survive.
All right. Would you respond? Thank you, Karen. Robert?
I would be happy to respond. Just for a bit of context here, the health care reform law included $200 billion that's coming directly out of the Medicare Advantage program that's lowering the payments to that program. There's also a new tax on health insurance that's going to impact beneficiaries in the program. That starts next year. And then there was a new tax that was just proposed by the Medicare agency last month that will further impact the program. So next year, there's $11 billion cut to the Medicare Advantage program. Washington simply cannot cut and tax the program that much and not expect beneficiaries in the program to be harmed.
Barbara on I-49. Barbara, please be brief. You're on with Robert Zirkleback.
I'd like your person to speak more specifically in response to the question the previous caller just asked, which was my question, and he did not answer that question, and that is what percentage right now of money come to those insurance companies. The other point I wanted to make is that not all senior citizens qualify for Medicare. You have to qualify for Social Security before you qualify for Medicare, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Robert, would you respond?
Well, just to be clear, maybe I'm misunderstanding the question. Private plans get money from the government to administer benefits, and so when they're using those funds to provide benefits and services to beneficiaries, because of competition in the program, because of the innovation these plans provide, they're able, as a result, to be able to provide additional benefits, additional services that are helping meet the needs of beneficiaries. All Medicare beneficiaries have the option of enrolling in a Medicare Advantage plan.
All right, a question from Michael Wolf. He says, can you explain the difference between Medicare Advantage programs and programs utilizing Medicare supplemental insurance plans?
Sure. So when a beneficiary becomes eligible for Medicare, as I mentioned, they can choose to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan where it provides comprehensive health care coverage all under one plan, or they can choose to enroll in the traditional fee-for-service part of Medicare. And if they would like, they can also purchase a supplemental policy to help fill in the gaps of coverage that the fee-for-service program doesn't provide. So they have a number of options so that to meet the needs, to meet their specific needs.
297-5633 is your number. A question from Stephanie. She wants to know if those who are on this list of those expressing concerns about the funding for Medicare Part C, were any of those Congress people, were they supporters of the Affordable Care Act at the outset?
Absolutely. Absolutely they were. And I think this is what's important is that there were cuts to the program included in the Affordable Care Act, and those are scheduled to really start taking effect this this upcoming year. And there was a new cut proposed by the administration just last month. And on that cut, people on both sides of the aisle, Republicans, Democrats, supporters of the law, opponents of the law, have all said that that cut goes too far. That cut will be harmful to beneficiaries, and that an urging CMS to make changes before they're finalized on April 1st.
All right. Well, we thank you for joining us, Robert Zirkleback. Kevin, do we have time for one more inquiry? Nell in Lafayette, please be brief. Nell, you're on with Robert Zirkleback.
Hi. I just wanted the caller to, Mr. Zirkleback to answer the question that's been posed to him twice about the percentage of the money that goes to the insurance company under Part C. What percentage of the total premiums for that population is paid by the federal government to the insurance companies?
Do you know that, Robert?
Well, all of the money, instead of providing directly the benefits through the fee-for-service program, it goes to the private plan so then they can then pay benefits and services, coordinate care, offer additional benefits to beneficiaries. So that's how it works.
How much do insurance companies keep for administrative purposes and the like? Obviously, you're in business to pay bills.
I don't have that specific data. If you're asking about administrative costs, though, I think that there's a reason there's a difference, and that's because private plans are providing more services. They're coordinating care. They're doing the types of things that beneficiaries want, and quite frankly, that most people agree are needed to help improve care for beneficiaries.
All right. Thank you, Robert Zirkleback. Good to visit with you, and let's follow this, and maybe we'll have you back.
Perfect. Thank you.
Take care. Bye. 297-5633 is your number, and for a few moments we're joined by a couple of filmmakers who are on the cutting edge of The Pardon, premiering in Louisiana tomorrow. It's about Tony Jo Henry, the last woman executed in Louisiana's electric chair, November 28th, 1942. Good morning, Tom Anton and Sandy Russell.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about The Pardon.
Well, it's the true story of Tony Jo Henry. She was, as you mentioned, the last person executed in the state of Louisiana.
Last
woman executed. And it's her story from being raised in a home, a broken home, where her father and stepmother abused her and got her into the life of prostitution and drugs at a very young age, and how she met the man of her dreams, Cowboy Henry, who got her off drugs, married her. They had a future together they were looking forward to, but there was a warrant out for Cowboy Henry for his involvement in a murder when he used to run with Bonnie and Clyde, which also brings it to a Louisiana story. He was imprisoned and sentenced, and Tony Jo hooked up with one of his old accomplices and tried to get some money to get an appeal, and with that, they ended up murdering a man, and the state was going to make an example out of Tony Jo.
Sandy, who pulled the trigger?
Oh, that's part of the reason to go to the movie. It's a bit of a whodunit. We show both sides of the story because I don't think anybody really knows who pulled that trigger.
Well, while Tony was in prison, she was baptized by a Catholic priest, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. A Catholic priest enters the story about the last third of the film. He befriended her and helped her to basically have some peace as she faced that electric chair.
Well, as far as Tony Jo, she was a captivating figure. Beautiful, right?
Oh, very beautiful. I think that may have been one of the reasons also because when the body was found of the man they murdered, he was found nude, and they just wanted to make an example. And here was this beautiful woman that was involved in this, and the state just really stacked everything against her.
Where is the film premiering? It's in Louisiana, obviously, appropriately, and tomorrow's the premiere date. How many cities?
We're going to be in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Lake Charles, Lafayette, and Shreveport.
All right, so you're covering most of the metro areas. And this murder took place where?
It actually happened in Calcasieu Parish. It was outside of Lake Charles where
near Jennings,
was.
Right? Near Jennings, Louisiana?
Near Jennings, Louisiana,
yes.
That's correct.
And it happened at gunpoint, obviously, and what were the circumstances behind the murder that we know about?
Well, basically, there was the owner of a car dealership was delivering a car to a friend of his in Louisiana, And it was almost probably one of the first carjackings probably that happened, where they were hitchhiking. He pulled over and was offering to give them a ride, and during that time they pulled a gun and basically were trying to use his car as a getaway, and then the story unfolded where they ended up killing him.
And Tony Joe was apprehended in Shreveport, wasn't she?
Yeah, she turned herself in. Her uncle was captain of the state police, and she went to her aunt's house, Aunt Emma, who lived in Shreveport, who raised her for a little bit, and she turned herself in and actually led the people to the body. They had no idea that this crime had taken place.
What happened to the others who were major players in this story?
I'm not sure
what
you mean.
Well, for example, Claude Henry, what happened to him?
Well, he ended up getting out of jail, believe it or not. I guess he had a heart condition, which we actually just recently learned about. But he was let out of jail, and not long after that, he was killed. So it's not a very happy ending for Cowboy Henry.
Well, it's a compelling story, but as you say, there aren't many happy endings here.
Well, actually, I tell people it sounds like it's a downer kind of movie. There's an electrocution and all that, but it's PG-13. You're not going to see any of that. There's no sex that you're going to see. There's no drug use. It's all just implied. So that's why it's the PG-13. But it also is a really great story of redemption and love and hope and forgiveness. And so it ends up a beautiful story at the end of it. And with it coming up to Easter week, I think it's perfect timing to bring out the whole idea of redemption and God's love for us.
Well, Sandy Anton and Tom Anton, Sandy Russell Anton, you've done quite a job, and I'm sure it took a lot of elbow grease to make this come to fruition.
Well,
I love the caption on the Shreveport News where it says "Against all odds," because that's what it feels like when you're the little guy, the independent film. It's shot beautifully. You would not know this with an independent film. When you look at the trailer, you can see that. But it is against all odds for us to be out there and doing this and getting to this point, as it was against all odds for Tony Joe.
What was your budget?
Our budget was around $5
million. $5 million.
So yeah, the average studio Hollywood film this last year was about $38 million. So that kind of puts it in perspective. We were the very small guys on in the film part, but we were fortunate because we had a great cast with Academy Award nominee John Hawkes and Jamie King, who's was just fantastic. T.J. Thine, who's currently in a television show called Bones, and it was just a great opportunity to work with these actors and to be able to recreate Shreveport, Louisiana, where we shot the whole film, of making it the 1930s and 40s. We had 125 cars from the 30s and 40s and over 500 extras. We had the clothes from the 30s. So it was a challenge, but it was a lot of fun.
We had also a really great crew. We had a cinematographer, Matthew Irving, that really captured the colors and the movement of that time. And we also had a great set designer, Ann Steeler, who works currently on Blue Bloods, the Tom Selleck series on TV. And she did an amazing job as well, just really decorating the rooms to look the 1930s, 1940s.
Well, thank you, Sandy and Tom. And the film, The Pardon, premieres in Louisiana and tomorrow in Baton Rouge at Perkins Row. So thank you so much.
And if they want to see the trailer, they can get onto the website, and that's www.thepardonmovie.com.
Thank you very much. And we're joined now in studio by the man who heads the LSU Faculty Senate, Kevin Cope, Ph.D. from Harvard University. And the last time he was with us, he said he would be hot and bothered if LSU did not hire a new president with a Ph.D. Well, LSU went out and did that, but...
Well, good morning, Jim. It's always a pleasure to take a stroll on the hot coals of controversy here to talk about being hot and bothered. But I think that despite all the controversy that you see in the newspaper, the faculty senate is, in fact, taking a very measured approach to this. That is, there are actually two issues. One issue is the way in which the search was handled, and the other issue is, of course, the qualification of the candidates. And I gather that your question pertains to the latter. I think one feature of our times is that we're very hyperbolic. That is, everybody has to be the answer to everything or is an utter villain. And when we look at King Alexander, what we see is somebody who has some qualifications and who doesn't have others. On the good side, to make it quick, he has earned degrees in graduate schools, and he does have something of a publishing record, and he does seem to understand some aspects of the academy. On the downside, on the other hand, he has never been at a true large research university, and there are some questions as to whether he rose through the rank by natural merit or through a degree of advantage. And, of course, also, we're thinking that there are very few other candidates without experience in land-grant universities or medical institutions who would come straight to the presidency in quite this fashion. We are cautiously optimistic at the same way that we are deliberately pessimistic.
F. King Alexander, he is the president at Cal State Long Beach, a school with 36,000 students, third largest school in California, where Kevin Cope is originally from. In fact, you probably could have gone to Cal State Long Beach back in your day.
I don't know if I would have made the admission criteria.
And Jerry Tarkanian was a basketball coach in those days, but before he moved to UNLV. But F. King Alexander is a guy who was chosen supposedly from 30 other applicants for the job. I'm under the impression that that's one of your complaints, is that you don't know who else was in the running.
That is correct. It's very difficult to make comparisons when one doesn't know the other terms in the comparison set. And also, of course, you mentioned Cal State University Long Beach. There's no question that that's a very successful institution, but it's not successful so much by the standards that you would see in the LeGrad Act. That is, the graduation and retention rate there is lower than those rates at LSU. So that perhaps is a good act of self-criticism by the Board of Supervisors, who usually hold up everything the governor's got to say. Here they've chosen a guy who has educated people in a different way than that specified by the LeGrad Act.
297-5633 if you'd like to join Kevin Cope, 877-217-5757 outside Baton Rouge. Hank Danis, the chair of the board of the LSU Board of Supervisors, has a different opinion about F. King Alexander. Here's President Danis.
The faculty members, even Kevin Cope himself, has made some complimentary remarks about Dr. Alexander. So I'm not sure what the lack of confidence message is all about.
All right. Do we have another one? Let's get one more.
Selection
from Hank
Downs. A number of distinguished college presidents suggested and advised that a process where the confidentiality of the candidates was protected would be would result in a better selection process. So that's what we did.
Okay.
Well, whenever I hear "even before my name," I know I've hit a raw nerve. Even Kevin Cope, that's a good one. Well, first of all, the question is, where does this secrecy come from? And the answer is that the cult of secrecy, as I call it, has been generated largely by search firms that are certainly doing a good job occasionally, but acting in their interest as much as in the public interest.
We'll pick it up. A vote of no confidence from the LSU Faculty Senate, led by Kevin Cope, English professor at LSU. 297-5633 is your number. We'll be back with Kevin after this 90-second timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Dr. Kevin Cope is with us, a man who's been at LSU since 1983, 30 years now. He's seen a few chancellors and presidents come and go, and he is head of the Faculty Senate. And 50-year-old F. King Alexander is poised to become the new president of LSU. The Board of Supervisors has decided on Dr. Alexander as the person to succeed Bill Jenkins. And the Faculty Senate, how many members are there, by the way?
There are currently...
Kevin? Might have to move back to this one. Oops. How many members of the Faculty Senate?
Okay, we're back in the seat now. We currently have 62 members of the Faculty Senate plus seven officers.
Seven officers who are on board, I guess. Was this a unanimous decision by the Faculty Senate?
Yes, this was a unanimous decision, and indeed this resolution rose out of the grassroots. It was proposed by a senator, and it was debated fully and carefully for an hour, and then it received an acclaim vote fully in its favor.
Okay, so F. King Alexander is not in favor right now with the Faculty Senate. Now,
Jim, I'd like to make a slight correction, not that you've ever erred, but it is primarily the Board of Supervisors and the search that is not in favor. Now, F. King Alexander, we do have our questions about him, so he's sort of semi-in favor. So if you get three out of four, that is one full negative and a half negative, I guess that's out of favor.
Fieldon King Alexander is his name, by the way, father of three, twice named President of the Year by the California State University Student Association. He is an avid basketball player, I hear, a native of Louisville, Kentucky, raised in Gainesville, Florida. He's been around, attended St. Lawrence University in New York, where he got his bachelor's degree. And he is a guy who obviously stood above the other applicants for the job. Kevin Cope, based on a story that appeared in Tiger Rag a month or so ago, his party affiliation is listed as monarchist.
Well, that was in my earlier days. I wanted to see whether indeed there was an opportunity to register for any party in Louisiana, and I'm always an advocate for truth. After all, this state is a monarchy. It began as a monarchy, and it still is a monarchy.
Well, you, a man who has listed his party affiliation as monarchist, might like the idea of a person named King Alexander being.
Well, that's a good one, right. And that rounds back to your early question about secrecy. You know, one nice thing about America is that it's not really a monarchy, and so we're wondering why the supervisors are stressing values that are not really American: secrecy, privacy. Indeed, I would say this is a less of a democratic process than the papal conclave, because in the papal conclave, at least you knew who the candidates might have been.
Well, there really is no reason to keep this secret other than to protect the other applicants who were not chosen in the past. We had a public cattle call when LSU hired a football coach in 1986. Steve Spurrier was one of the applicants. He was not chosen. Mike Shanahan was one of the applicants, not chosen. But they managed to survive and live to fight another day.
In fact, I like your notion of a cattle call. That brings to mind another word that begins with bull. In any event, the secrecy thing is simply based on a fallacious argument. The argument is that the candidates, if they're exposed, will suffer greatly. But in fact, every candidate who's been outed that I know of has ended up getting a raise. Take a look at our old chancellor, good old Mike Martin. When he moved from New Mexico State University to LSU, the first thing that happened was the governor tried to retrieve him.
Well, and any member of the Board of Supervisors could leak the names. There's nothing to stop them. And you have one member who is publisher of a prominent newspaper here, and you'd think he might do that.
297. You'd think that.
5633. John in Lafayette. Good morning, John. You're on the air with Kevin Cope.
Good morning, Dr. Cope. You've been in Louisiana long enough to know that one of the things that's held our state back are parochialism, envy, jealousy of LSU. And I'm just hopeful that once you and the other faculty members get to meet Dr. King, that or Dr. Alexander, that you all can come together and we not have a house divided at LSU, and we can all work together from this point forward, because we have a lot of other problems in the state other than having the faculty opposed to the new president.
Thank you, John. I think that's sagacious advice. There are two points here. One is, of course, I want to stress that whatever happens, the faculty and the Faculty Senate, which extends over the entire state, not just on this campus, is going to make a true, faithful, and diplomatic effort to make the best out of it. I like to say that we have more than once been asked to build the Eiffel Tower out of silly putty, and if we have to do it once again, we will. On the other hand, I think it is essential in a major university like the one that we are trying to build world, for the university to behave in ways consistent with its values and with its mission. And that's really what we're trying to bring into focus here, that the old days, the days filled with jealousy and rivalry that you're talking about, need to be over and over now. We may end up welcoming Mr. King, but we have to make it clear to Mr. King what the values of the university really are.
You, earlier you had a line that if LSU hired somebody without a PhD, it would be like Bobby Yarborough, who's on the LSU board and is affiliated with Amanda Meets. What was the line?
Yes, that would be like asking Bobby Yarborough, who is a good friend of mine down there at Amanda Meets, to appoint a vegetarian as the president of his company or the chief operating officer, whatever. And that definitely would have been the case. You know, the General Motors, you wouldn't take somebody who had specialized in screwdriver management and say that person was experienced in the building of cars. Likewise, we have to draw a distinction between somebody who's proficient in the supposed science of academic administration and somebody who's come up through the ranks, like John Lombardi did, for example, in a traditional field. Now, again, that doesn't mean you can't be taken by surprise. The greatest monarch in the history of Europe was Charlemagne, and his father overthrew his predecessor and was outright illegitimate. So happy things happen now and then.
F. King Alexander, how do his credentials compare with, say, those of Mark Emmert when he arrived at LSU?
Well, it's a similar scenario, isn't it? That is, Mark Emmert was billed as a whiz kid, and he turned out to be one. And perhaps his credentials were a little bit, shall we say, abstract as well. And that could very well happen once again, no question about that. But I think the thing about Mark Emmert is that he also was a leader in his time, and the times have changed. We have a more demanding faculty. We have a more straitened budget. So I think that the knack that Mark Emmert had would be something that is not quite right for this time either.
But you're saying you're keeping an open mind, even though the Faculty Senate has voted no confidence. What does this really mean?
That's a good question, Jim. That is, people ask what's going to happen because we can't compel the board to right its way or reverse its decision. But it does two things. One is it establishes a record and sends a clear signal to LSU, to the world, that the LSU faculty and by extension LSU holds some values and that it holds some standards. The other is, of course, that it changes the nature of the dialogue. It makes it clear that the supervisors have eroded the basis of trust that is the fundamental support of the university. We're hoping that that's going to be like a tugboat working on a destroyer and perhaps gradually push us into a safer harbor.
Well, the Daily Reveille editor-in-chief is pondering legal action against the university. The Reveille has hired a lawyer to identify the candidates. The Reveille wants this to be made public. I'm sure you're cheering on these students.
I am definitely cheering on the Reveille, and I'm glad to see that the Reveille is rising to the same standard of journalism as Louisiana Radio Network.
Well, it is nice to see the Reveille fighting against the university. This goes back to the days of Huey Long on an issue that has real relevance. Open, transparent government is something I think most of us want. And we would encourage any member of the Board of Supervisors to leak those names, and in particular, anyone who has something to do with the media.
You know, Jim, you and I think alike. While I was sitting there at the Board of Supervisors meeting, I heard Ronald Reagan saying, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And I thought the same thing about Hank Danos. Hank Danos, I dare you to make a step forward in the management of the university and rip through that veil of secrecy. You can do it. I've got confidence in you. Even though I said no confidence, I've got in the board, I've got confidence in you personally.
Well, maybe it'll happen. Do you think it will? Do you think we'll know who else applied?
Well, it's pretty hard for whatever it is, 16 people plus attendance, to keep a secret in the long run. You know, talk about this murder case you were mentioning a few minutes ago. There's an old saying, murder will out. In other words, sooner or later, you're going to find the culprit, and sooner or later, we're going to get the story.
Mm-hmm. C.B. Pergunston was on the show a few weeks back and predicted that Stephen Moray would be the choice. We don't even know if he applied. We may know soon if he applied, but CB now says that Stephen's in line to be the number two guy to F. King Alexander. I don't know if there's any truth to this, but could you accept that?
What I would say is that is a speculation that is grounded on reason and evaluation of past track record. It could be. Certainly the new president is entering in a slightly weakened posture, so we are hoping that he shows enough backbone to distinguish himself from the governor and the regime. After all, that's on the downside of its 8-year run, so let's hope that King Alexander proves, as a king, to be stronger than a mere governor.
Well, we thank you, Kevin Cope, monarchist and head of the Faculty Senate. 30 years at LSU. Who would have thought? A man from San Diego and Harvard would end up at LSU for 30 years.
Who would have thunk it, and who would have thunk that my climax would be here in the Jim Engster studio?
Well, we always enjoy hearing from Kevin Cope.
Thanks, Jim.
And he's joined here by one of his colleagues, Carl Monsenbacher, LSU horticulturist, who's been with us a few times. And Carl is, of course, another well-educated academician on the campus of Louisiana State University. Degree from Cornell, the university which produced Bill Maher, class of 78, and Ann Coulter, class of 84. Did you know either of them?
No, I didn't. They were contemporaries, though.
They probably were on campus at the same time as you. But you were in a different field. And Carl Monsenbacher is a man who knows crops and plants, and this is a big time for him, as it has been the last few years, the third annual Dinner in the Field and Farm Tour. What's going to happen this weekend?
Well, I'd like to say welcome. Well, thank you for allowing me to be here today. Slow Food Baton Rouge is having their annual event, Dinner in the Field, which is a fundraiser. And I would like to shout out that we still have some tickets available, but the other two events we have are a farm tour from 10 to 3 this coming Sunday. We have four farms.
Okay, what are the four farms?
McCowan Farm, Feliciana's Best Creamery, which is the it's a dairy, Yardbird Farms, and Port Hudson Organic.
And so, what can be learned from the general public, which listening who might have a desire to go on this tour?
I think the interesting thing is that all the farms are different, but it gives the public a chance to see what working farms are like, see what kinds of activities that go on, see how they're integrated. They can learn about how they market their products. So I think it's a good chance to actually see and be part of like an agrotourism type effort.
Well, as I noted, you've done this the last few years, and if you've talked with us about it, what have you learned in the last 2 years that will be part of the experience this time?
Well, I think for the people that go on the tours, actually, I don't go on the tours because we're busy at Oakland where there's a social from 3 to 5. But for me, I like to visit farms periodically to see how they've adapted, how they've changed. Maybe they've added a new enterprise, such as purchasing a high tunnel and growing vegetables in it. How do they raise their transplants? So you can see, if you went the last 2 years to some of the same farms, you can see how they've progressed.
And we've talked about slow food. That's a concept that is becoming more known. What do you mean when we talk about slow food?
Well, the local chapter, we're all about promoting a more sustainable local food economy. The slow food movement is an international movement, but we're all about good, clean, and fair food, raising food that's healthy, that's good for the environment, sustaining the workers and farms and families, sustaining the communities. But for us, for this event, we're looking mainly at, we're having a farm-to-table dinner. This is the only one that I know of in the area. I know there's some other organizations that will probably be having some in the near future. But the farm tour, and then we're having a social where you can actually get together, and we're having some artists this year there. And I don't
where will that be?
And that's at Oakland Plantation up in Gurley, Louisiana. It's about 30 minutes from Baton Rouge.
Okay, and then you have a dinner?
And the dinner starts at 5 o'clock.
At the same place,
At the same place, and it's outside. It's supposed to be a beautiful weekend. We've been fortunate the last 2 years to have great weather, and I think it's going to be a nice weekend
weekend. There'll be a lot of red meat on the platter?
Well, we will have local. I estimated last year we had about 95% local ingredients, but we do have vegan options for each of the courses. It's a 5-course meal. And we have chefs from Baton Rouge, what we would consider local celebrity chefs. It's headed up by Jamie Hernandez of Jubin's. I'd like to acknowledge his effort in organizing the chefs and organizing the dinner.
Well, the tour and the dinner, I'm sure some would like to know more. If they'd like to find out more, what's the best way to learn more about the Slow Food Baton Rouge third annual Dinner in the Field and Farm Tour?
Yeah, the easiest way to do this would be to go to our website, slowfoodbr.org. And if you send an email, we'll respond. You can find all the information there is about the tour, the social, and the dinner.
As far as the department, we just had Kevin Cope on here. How have budget cuts affected you?
I think everywhere around the state we are dealing with budget cuts. And
people losing their jobs? People looking for jobs
people
elsewhere?
People looking for jobs elsewhere. I know in my own family, I had my wife lost her job at LSU last summer, for instance. So there's a lot of issues going on with that. It was interesting because I'm in the Faculty Senate also, and so I hate to say this, but it's hard to follow Kevin.
Yeah, did you vote no confidence as well?
Well, it was a unanimous vote.
Well, so was it really unanimous, or did Cope just say it's going to be unanimous?
No,
the monarchist that he is.
He's a good parliamentarian. I can vouch for that.
So it was unanimous. So Carl Motzenbacher also voted no confidence on the LSU Board of Supervisors and the selection of F. King Alexander. And Dr. Cope said it wasn't about F. King Alexander. It was about the Board of Supervisors and the lack of transparency.
Yeah, and just not being more open in the whole process, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carl Motzenbacher, and good luck with the third annual Dinner in the Field and Farm Tour. And for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. We thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.